Justin, we have an incredible announcement for the people. Tell them.
Big announcement coming. Austin, Texas, this November, the second Intentional Fatherhood Retreat. We are pumped. What dates, Brooke?
November 12th through the 14th, you can join us in Austin, Texas for a weekend to get away and to be refreshed and transformed as a father. Tell the people what they can expect, Justin.
We're going to have incredible worship. We're going to have great teaching. We're going to have a community of dads all coming together, not just to hear a biblical framework on how to live intentionally as a father, but also to be equipped with tons of practical habits and help on how to do that. Most of all, though, this is the kind of thing where you come into a community of dads who are all trying to follow Jesus into fatherhood together. And let me tell you guys, this will change your life. So we want you there.
Come out, go get your tickets at intentionalfatherhood.org. You can get all of your tickets there. And please, again, join us. Austin, Texas, November 12th through the 14th. Can't wait to see you there.
Welcome to the Intentional Fatherhood Podcast, where we explore what it means to live on purpose as a father and how legacy starts at home. I'm Justin Whitmore Early.
And I'm Brooke Moser. We'll be your hosts, and we desire to bring biblical hope and practical help. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back to the Intentional Fatherhood Podcast. This is season three, and if it feels weird, it's because I'm introducing it. This is Justin Early. I'm here with Brooke Moser. He always introduces. Was it weird or was it good?
I want to clap. That was great. I was trying to figure out where you're going.
I did okay.
You did okay.
Yes.
Justin, you're ready. You have graduated to be able to do the introduction. I want to highlight. The only reason I've ever did the introductions it was just one less thing to think about.
That's because you like to take charge.
Oh no! I'm a second born child. I'm actually okay with not. But the other whoever in charge has to have the better idea. That's what I've learned. Like as long as they're the stronger one, then I'm fine to submit.
I'm pumped about introducing some episodes on this season because this season is feeling very near and dear to my heart. We're here in Richmond, Virginia.
But you can't, you're already skipping. You forgot to tell them what to do. Like,
we're going to tell them to like and subscribe in a second.
Okay, got it. Keep
going. I'm going to get to that. But look, let me set the stage.
Set the stage.
We're back in Richmond, Virginia.
Yes, we are.
I owe you another one because you came back to RVA. I'm going to have to come to Ben next time. We're recording season three. We're back in the basement of my law firm.
Yes, sir.
But everybody should be looking on YouTube here because I'm in a camo shirt.
I was just
going to
say, I can't even see you. I don't even know where you are.
You're in a great New York hat?
No, not yet home. Also, if anyone knows those guys, would you let me know? They got great stuff.
Not yet home hat?
I'm not trying to rep them. I just love what they do.
So it's Monday morning in the basement of the law firm, but I'm not upstairs working in my button up. We're downstairs because we're going to be recording a season on work and vocation. And I'm so pumped about it. And you're going to want to tune into this whole thing. You're going to want to follow this whole arc. Mm-hmm. In a minute, we're going to connect for you why this is connected to all our other seasons. But look, you can't follow the whole arc if you're not subscribed.
There you go, baby.
You need to like and subscribe. It gets other people to hear the podcast.
It's true.
And you want to be listening to this podcast with other people.
Preach.
It also is going to get you into all the episodes. We have a lot to say about work. We're going to give you a big like theology of work and why fatherhood and work are so intertwined, all the things. But we need you to like and subscribe to do that, right? Am I missing anything?
Yeah, dude, you are not missing. One other detail, just the website questions. Do you want me to do that?
You do that part.
So intentionalfatherhood.org, we have a website. Check all that out. You might want to do that because we have some exciting events happening and coming up. And also just want to say, if you have questions, one of the best ways to submit a question is to send a 1-minute voice memo with your name, where you're from, and just email it to hello@intentionalfatherhood.org. And that, again, just helps us stay connected. And I know these like little business details seem to be frustrating or repetitive, but it's because they're that important. And so I can't believe we're in season three. When we started this whole thing, I just would have not expected the response, what God's been doing, our first fatherhood retreat, which we got to when we were in San Diego together a few weeks back or a month or so ago, just processing together all that. And I mean, it still is just an honor for every single man. And now just an army of women, their wives. We just literally got back. I got here yesterday and I came from the Intentional Motherhood Retreat that we did for all your ladies in Nashville. My wife and I was there, and her mother-in-law, or my mother-in-law, her mom, And I mean, it was like I was telling you, Justin, it was like it was a similar thing that happened at the fatherhood retreat. It was different, of course, because it was geared towards mothers and motherhood, but the same spirit, the same transformation. I mean, whatever God's doing right now is just an honor to be a part of. And so Justin and I are here to serve you in that journey. But I think it's also really important to note, like, we're going to have a lot of fun because I like fun. I know you like fun too.
You love it.
You love it.
You love it. But it does, you love it. It does feel like the Lord is doing something kind of bigger than our plans in this. We just started this barely over a year ago.
Yes. It didn't even launch until Father's Day.
That's right. Yeah. And we just did our first retreat, 3 months ago now?
February, ago. Yep.
And both season one and season two and the Intentional Fatherhood Retreat feel like, whoa, the Lord is working beyond us. The Lord is doing something really incredible.
Agreed.
And I'm feeling it in the arc. So I think we should get in the arc because we kind of planned out season one, not really knowing where any of this would go.
Yes.
But it feels like both of us have been like, oh my gosh, I see where the Lord is going here.
Yes.
So why not sketch out for us where we were in season one and two, and then I'll sketch out where we're going in season three and beyond.
I love it. Yeah. Just like you said, I think I love the divine nature. It feels so wonderful to be able to be responding to what God's doing and joining him in that good work, which again, we're going to talk about. But we originally, as you already know, and this is on intentionalfatherhood.org. You can go check it out. We just talked about the 8 different tension points. And of course, there's far more, but 8 tension points that fatherhood really falls in between. And of course, there again is more, but I do think it encapsulated in a huge way. Encapsulated.
I was not going to call you on that. But I was like, that's no, not how
you
say it.
I'm going to call me on that because I was it's early. It's been a long weekend. It's encompassed. pick a different word. No, it just was the totality of what we could kind of sum to say, this is the tension points. And there's 8 there. And we went through each of those as like an episode and a topic. And then season 2 was really setting up a lot of like, well, where are you at in your story? How to name that, how to understand what you're doing in your life, but also what is happening in the different ages and stages that you are currently in personally, but maybe even your family's in.
Yep.
And we covered those 3 things of getting your life together. What does that look like? How do you do that? Giving your life away, which is where many are at in that midlife where you've gathered a lot of your life, learned a skill or a craft, got married, have kids, but now you're giving your life away. Truly, we feel that.
Yep.
And then lastly, giving your death away. And so we covered all of that and kind of through those setting up of those 8 episodes of the tension points and then identifying what stage and helping you identify, hopefully, what stage you're in. Justin, where do we sense the Spirit wanting to take us for the next bit here?
We're going to deep dive because if season 1 is a map and season 2 is sort of like a story, you now have a geographic framing in season 1. And if you haven't listened to it, you really should.
Yes.
You should go on the website and you should look at the map of the tension points because we talked about things like spiritual disciplines and physical disciplines, 2 tension points of fatherhood. We talked about out of hiding and into covenant friendship, 2 tension points of fatherhood.
Yes.
We talked about your family past, your family future, like as in where you came from and what you're doing with your family. Then we also talked about meaning and work and all those 8 things we just named. That's the sort of the map that we let out in season 1. And then you just explained season 2, getting your life together, giving your life away, giving your death away, this sort of time narrative of it. So now, listeners, you have a map of the tension points of fatherhood. So if you feel like it's hard to do what you're doing, it's because it is. You're living between all these tension points.
Yeah.
And if you feel like, man, I'm in a tough stage of life. Yeah, like season 2, you're in the stage of giving it away. And so you could think about season 1 and season 2 trying to help you understand why it indeed feels so hard to rise to the call of fatherhood.
Yes.
And we want to equip you to really think about that, dive deep into that, and figure out what to do. So we now have like our next years planned out ahead of us because we're going to take the next 8 seasons.
Yes.
And we're going to dive deep into each one of those places of fatherhood and talk like in depth about what does it mean to plan your family future?
Yep.
What does it mean to like understand your family past? What does it mean to come out of hiding sin and vices? What does it mean to do covenant community, covenant friendship? But in this season, we are going to go deep into what does it mean to work?
Yeah, and maybe to nuance that one little piece, not just to work, but calling, vocation, the difference, theology. And hopefully what we want to do, just to add that little cherry on top to what you said, is simply that we want to actually this season, and hopefully that as you listen through this season, it will give you a taste of what we mean. When we say deep dive, we mean we are going not only on the surface of like what these things are,
yep,
but then even deeper of how can you, as a father, as a husband, and all of our sisters listening, identify where this is at, how to actually understand this in your own life, in your story, and how to live it out. And so if you've struggled with like, what's my calling and what's the difference and what's vocation, yep, and what, yep, like, hopefully our hope by the end of this is to actually give you a comprehensive idea and then really, truly practical tools to do something with it. And so season three, I can't believe it, and honored to do it. And just also have to say, it has been absolutely wild, the Fatherhood Retreat response. And so as you've already heard, you know, we're going to be doing another one in Austin, Texas, which is incredible.
Cannot wait.
And we have a far bigger venue than we did before. So bring a friend, bring five. But we just see like God's doing something here. And that's our prayer, especially for this season as well. So,
It was honestly at the Fatherhood Retreat in February that I at least started to think we should do our next season on work and vocation, because so many people's questions were some version of how do you balance work and family life? And it is such a central question of fatherhood. I actually don't like the question because I don't like the word balance, because it imagines they're on two opposite sides of the scales, like inherently in tension. We've talked about this. We'll talk about it more. But so many things, if you were to make a word map, and turns out I did.
he immediately made a word map.
Word map of the kinds of things that came up at the Intentional Fatherhood Retreat. So many of them center around work. Like, let me just read you, you know, I made a mind map. Work at the center. There's family. There's calling. There's ambition. How do I divide up my time? Where is meaning, purpose? What about hobbies, side projects, providing for your family, making decisions? Am I called to work? Is this ministry? Is this secular? Is this sacred? What do I do with my ambition? I feel like I'm meant to leave. I feel like I'm meant to serve. I could keep going. It impacts your health, like your mental health, your physical health.
In fact, I did.
I could keep going. But when I think about, Brooke, my life, and when I think about the lives of the dads that I meet and talk to, whether or not you understand why you do what you do is absolutely central. Some people don't know their calling. They don't know the purpose. They don't know their vocation. But by the end of the season, they are.
This is completely surface and has nothing to do with work, but that's an incredibly good camo. I see a lot of different camo shirts. Yeah. Go head over to YouTube.
This is our second nod to, hey, go watch on YouTube. We're here.
Yeah, it wasn't on purpose, but where did you, that's a good camo.
My wife bought this for me.
It has that extra touch. It's not just like generic camo. Yeah. It's better.
I think it's from Abercrombie and Fitch, which is kind of embarrassing because that was...
This shirt is.
Stop.
I am not... Abercrombie and Fitch is coming back hard.
They're coming back big
with
time.
Basics.
They were super big when I was in high school. Yeah, I thought they died.
But dude, any guy listening that has
we're
any...
We're not paid. No, this is not an ad.
Totally we're open to it. Absolutely. I literally in the last 2 years, I think half of my wardrobe became Abercrombie because their basics are so good.
I'll
literally show you all the things throughout this week. Anyway,
can't believe we're talking about that. Okay,
no, I can't. I absolutely can. That's real life. Okay, so let's get into this. And obviously, Justin, I would love to start with, and we kind of obviously we've prayed through this, we've mapped this out, but obviously as we've talked, I think the best place to start is really. The best place to start in any situation is scripture, foundation, theology. There is a real theology to work. And I think it's very easy to not just some forget that or some overdo it. I think there's a tension of both. We need to remember there's a theology of work, but we also need to remember that that doesn't put pressure on you to be something or in some place that you are not currently. So I want to just also say, as you're getting into this season, if you are feeling feelings of shame, like, oh, I haven't figured it out, are like, this is a process. Let's first say that. Secondly, there is a lot of men that I talk to on a daily, weekly basis who are still trying to figure out what they are fully made to do because they have not had good models. No one has helped them. They haven't had the conversation. They haven't known even what conversations to have. So I just want to say, wherever you are at listening, if you're really successful in your career, I hope this is helpful. But if you are also like seriously struggling and you're like, I'm just trying to make the ends meet, I'm working a lot of different jobs, or I'm literally out of work and I don't know what I'm to do.
Yeah.
You are good. Welcome here. And we are going to do our best to make sure that whatever angle or place and stage you're coming in, that this is going to be helpful. But it all starts with the theology of understanding what we are actually made to do. And honestly, why I'm so glad you're, I know Justin, I want you to take this part for sure. And you're going to, why I'm so glad we're about to talk about this is because every time, and you did such a good job summing this, I think we have such a misunderstanding what it means to have a theology of work. And so, Justin, give it to the people.
Yeah,
give us a couple minutes on this.
All right. Our goal before you leave this episode is that you have a big theology of work.
Yes.
Which in my mind, what I'm talking about is that you need a big theology of creation.
Yes.
You need a big theology of the fall. You need a big theology of redemption. You need a big theology of consummation, the kingdom to come.
Yes.
And I'm going to intertwine this a little bit with my story, because if you're listening, this is your first season you're tuning into, you may or may not know, I am a business lawyer. Mm-hmm. Again, we're in the basement of my law firm, Avoda Legal, right now. But I used to be a missionary in China.
Mm-hmm.
I write books as sort of a ministry side thing. So my life has been in and out of places other people might call sacred and secular, ministry and non-ministry. I don't love any of these terms, and I'll explain why. But a huge part of my story is realizing that work is much more spiritual than I ever thought. Ministry is not the only spiritual version of work, and that a big theology of work, particularly for a father, particularly for a man, is really going to help you understand why God lays a claim on all of your life and why everything that you do can have meaning.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So actually, before I dive into some Bible verses here, I might say some of my background is that I was really involved with Campus Crusade for Christ in college.
Mm-hmm.
It was so important for me. Nothing that I'm about to say is meant to be demeaning towards Crusade. I love it. It was such an incredible shaping influence in my life. It's what brought me to China as a missionary. So I was a missionary in China for 4+ years with Crew, as they call it now.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But something that I heard along the way in Campus Crusade, I specifically remember a fall retreat where I'm listening to this speaker. I think he was from Pennsylvania talk. He was talking about eternity and how we should do everything now for the sake of eternity. Because like what's going to last is what matters, which I agree with, by the way. But then he said this thing. He said, in the end, there are only three things that are eternal. God, the word of God, and the souls of men. And I was like, huh.
Hmm.
I mean, I was young. I was like in college, maybe a sophomore or junior. I can't remember. I kind of just took it as like, God lasts forever. The word of God lasts forever. Souls of men, that makes sense. And women, I think, but yeah. So anyway,
sorry, sisters listening.
Yeah, that idea. Well, that's why this was funny in a lot of ways, because it was a very, very, the farther I got from that statement, the more I realized how wrong and actually kind of dangerous it was. And again, I mean, no shade to Crusade. I mean, no shade to this man. But here's what's just problematic about that statement. It impacted me and many others to think a couple things. One, that the world is basically spiritual and not physical. God, the word of God, the souls of men. Okay. That's interesting. It also made us think that really probably in light of that, all that matters is ministry. Like the only proper vocation you could really take in light of a statement like that is, well, I should go save the souls of men and women.
Yep.
here's what I want to say really positively about Crusade. What was cool is that my years in China completely undid that kind of theology. And I got a really big theology of work thanks to all the people that were teaching me in China. Just like they had a really strong theology. And so some of the things that we looked at, for example, that I'm going to read to you now. My mentors, my teachers in China, and these were mostly American people, but they just had a great theology. They were like pushing back against this concept.
Yeah.
And they were saying, no, hold on. Like, open up Genesis. We get a whole chapter of God working, right? And then we get Genesis 1:27. So God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female created them. He blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and increase in number, fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky and over every living thing and creature that moves on the ground. This is a pivotal moment in scripture because you open it and you find God working, creating the, by the way, material world.
Yep.
Like material.
Yes.
The spiritual material world, not meant to be separated, not meant to be thought about distinctly. And then he invites mankind into that work. And you get a more full picture of this in Genesis 2, because we read Genesis 2:5. This is rehashing the creation of Adam. No shrub had yet appeared on the earth. No plant had yet sprung up, for the Lord God had not sent rain on the earth, and there was no one to work the ground. That's the word avoda. We're going to note here, or is it avodah? We don't know. My law firm is named after this word, avoda.
Yes, we were talking about that.
I've heard that Jewish people, Hebrew scholars pronounce it avodah. I don't know because I'm not one. It turns out I'm not Jewish, nor am I a Hebrew scholar.
For the
scholar.
Sake of your business, it's avoda.
Yeah, we're going to say avoda. You see it again in Genesis 2:15. The Lord took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to work it and take care of it. That's a derivative of the word avoda. And then you flip to the very other end of the Bible, okay?
Yes.
Very other end of the Bible. You open to Revelations 21, and you see, I saw a new heaven and a new earth. For the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and there was no longer any sea. I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride, beautifully dressed for her husband. I could read this whole passage. It's amazing. But this is where we get all things new. Behold, I'm making all things new. I, for a long time, with many other people, had what I would call a fall and redemption theology of work. The only real things I understood about the world was that it was broken and that Jesus redeemed the souls of men and women. Which, if you think about those two things, they're both really true, but probably the only proper vocations you'll get out of them is I need to fix something broken in the world, like justice, you know, and ministries, which is, by the way, great, which is not the only thing, or evangelism and discipleship ministry, because we're saving people. When you add in these incredible bookends of the rest of the Bible, and you see, no, wait, God is the one who invented the whole world. He's the God of work. He loves working. He's invited us into it. And wait, he's making it all new again. This idea that God, the word of God, and the souls of men and women are the only thing that lasts is actually just not true. The creation becomes new, is made new again. The former passes away, the new is to come. There's a lot of mystery here. I would grant there's a ton of mystery here.
Yes.
But we do know that there's this new city of God coming. We do know that all things find their newness in the new heavens and the new earth. And when you bookend that, you get a much bigger picture of work. One where ministry is absolutely at the center, and you have to think about how is work broken?
Yes.
And how are we bringing people to God? But also in a wider world of God does a lot of things. He cares about a lot of things. There's a lot for us to do. That's a really big story. And I would call that like a biblical theology of work. And if you're going to understand what you're doing and why you're doing it, you need a big biblical theology of work. Let me pause there because I talked for a minute. And say, did that make sense to you?
Fathers, we are so excited to let you know of two resources that myself and Justin have been working on. First, Sowing a Hidden Seed, Daily Prayers for Your Child's Spiritual Growth is available exclusively right now at intentionalparents.org or intentionalfatherhood.org. It is a 31-day guide to help you pray and focus with consistency on your family, your children, helping shape their hearts while God shapes yours. And of course, you've heard about it. Justin's resource, his new book, The Body Teaches the Soul, is available everywhere books are sold. This book is about the 10 essential habits that build a healthy and holy life, habits that strengthen how you lead your home. So we want to just encourage you, if you have not grabbed those resources and those are helpful, please take a moment, get those now, and let's get back to today's episode. What?
Were you like, no?
No, not only made sense. I mean, obviously, I not only fully agree and believe that, but I remember when I learned that. I mean, how freeing. And maybe for like, if this is the first time you're hearing that idea that ministry isn't the only valid work to do in the world, I hope it gives you what it gave me, which is just like this breath of like, wow, God created us all so different to do different things. And I think in my story or experience, there was so much. You grow up in the church. If you don't have a good theology or understanding of what work is, you naturally go, well, the only good work is the work that would be tied to mm-hmm. a church almost directly, or a nonprofit, or missions-based work. And we can get to this place where we feel like nothing's meaningful or powerful or useful if it's not connected to that. But I believe, man, that it can be such a sneaky lie of the enemy that he feeds so many. And it's so many men that I talk to even now that it's really just understanding this dynamic that you're highlighting, that we're talking about right now, to say, excuse me, to say that it is so absolutely freeing when you understand what you just said and what we're talking about here. And so not only did it make sense, I hope it did for many what it did for me years ago, of just understanding like you can do so many things in helping rebuild and be a part of the new heavens and the new earth right now. And you can do so many things that are not connected to a church that are so effective. And I would mm-hmm. argue in many ways and times even more impactful and affected. And I think the thing that I love the most is when I see Jesus followers who are really successful in business merge those worlds through so many various things. And I love that. So it not only made sense, I love that. And I think it's a super, super, super important thing for anyone listening to do as much as you can to, and if you didn't understand, go back and listen again. What Justin just said, what we are talking about, could be just one of the biggest freeing gifts for you to just excel in the work that you're mm-hmm. already in and not quit and go try to work at a church because you think that is the only holy, godly thing to do.
And I want to point out, I think what is hopefully going to be a really important dynamic of this season is that you're hearing from, you know, me talking right now, Justin.
Yes.
I run a law firm.
Yep.
But what? You Brooke, you run a ministry.
Yes. Absolutely. And that's my background.
And so while I think a lot of our listeners probably need the help to understand why their work as a electrician, I was just reading a question from an electrician who sent in on the, because I put out a call for questions on work. And I was like, I'm a full-time electrician, you know.
Electrician?
Yeah.
Oh, this guy did. Yes.
This guy's a full-time electrician. Yeah. People like you, you're an electrician. You're in private equity. You're an accountant. You're a lawyer like me. You're a dentist. You're a doctor. Some of them, you know, probably like doctors are like, well, I'm healing people. They feel like there's some significance to it. But people, you know, my electrician friends or my contractor friends, my fellow lawyers or accountants, sometimes they get in this place like, does my work really have meaning? Like, does it have any like significant eternal purpose? Like a lot of the season is going to be trying to remind you or teach you for the first time. Absolutely. Yes, it does. You need a theology for it, but none of it should be taken to say, I don't know, do some like fad swing against ministry where like, okay, the vibe now is like Christians should go do this kind of work. Like, no,
yes,
I used to be in ministry. You're in full-time ministry. Mm-hmm. Lord knows we need justice work. Lord knows we need poverty work. Lord knows we need missionaries. We need evangelism. We need discipleship. So I just want to equally yoke these vocations. Good and word. I hopefully will be, you know, given that we're in both of them, we'll be good at that.
And see. I think between, yes, I completely agree, between the differences, there's a lot of unity between you and I, obviously, but our work is different. And I many times thought and prayed through the business path, but truly in my life and situation, it's been very clear that this is the path that I'm supposed to take, but that has taken years to figure out. And it has taken so many different trying different things, doing different things. And so it was never clear, but it leads to, I want to share a little story, but it leads to 1 Corinthians 7:17. As we're setting up this whole season, as we're doing it with scripture to help you understand. Nevertheless, 1 Corinthians 7:17, love this. Each person should live as a believer in whatever situation the Lord has assigned to them, just as God has called them. This is the rule I lay down in all the churches. Paul's talking here. So I love this for so many reasons. Each person should live as a believer in whatever situation you're in. I mean, God has assigned, and I think we can get really, that word can sometimes maybe distract some, like, am I doing the right thing? Am I doing what God assigned me to do? Maybe. I don't know your story, but I'll tell you this. On the way to discovering what you are truly made to do, supposed to do, called to do, on that way and journey, which feels messy, in my experience, it all is important. Mm-hmm. You have to be where you are. Now, I want to say that because that sounds almost too simple and self-helpy. You have to be where you are. You cannot be where you are not. I know that sounds so silly, but so many men can see or hope to be where they want to be, but you cannot be where you're not. You have to take certain steps, stages, growth, stage of life to get there. And it's really easy for us to get really stuck on the vision that we have and forget, like, it is so many steps. If I'm looking at what I do now and stepping into intentional and leading a nonprofit and a ministry movement type thing, everything that I've done to do what I would say now I feel called to do has been absolutely essential to preparing me for this. And if I look back, although it didn't seem all that, for my, this is again, my story. If I look back and go, it didn't make sense at the time, but I look back now and go, this completely makes sense. Mm-hmm. So I remember for my personality type, being in full-time vocational church ministry, local church ministry, where you are in the grind every single week, was the best for my personality to grind out the rough edges, to show a certain level of work and heart and people. Like, they were all, like, when I look back, I literally say to people that we, when this topic comes up, it was the literal best training ground for what I now get to
do. Oh my gosh. I would say the exact same thing about being a missionary with Campus Crusade. That's my first job out of college.
Tell me.
It was just so helpful for making me not just an adult, but it taught me how to fundraise.
Ooh.
Which is the idea that you need to be able to basically go up to strangers, communicate big vision, and ask for their money. You do this all the time.
I know this life.
It's such a good skill.
It's a learned skill for sure.
It taught me productivity. Mm-hmm. How you're a missionary in China. What do you do? How do you structure your day?
Oof.
You know, you can make so many excuses in ministry.
Oh,
By the way, you can make so many excuses in an office.
Yeah.
Whether you're in
say it.
Okay, hold on.
I see your
head. Actually, I think this is an important moment. I'm going to come back to what Campus Crusade taught me. This is an important moment. Our listeners are going to struggle. You all, you're going to struggle like we have to divide up the world the way the enemy wants to divide it up. And that's like separating things that God intended to be whole.
Mm.
We divide the world often in terms of vocation, in terms of jobs that make money and jobs that have to ask for money. We call one secular, you're in the business world. We call one sacred, you're in the nonprofit world. We call one ministry, you know, we call one, you know, regular vocations. The dividing line in work is not whether you make money or ask for money. That's just not. Those are two kinds of God-ordained great work. They're both wonderful. Don't divide it up on any sort of moral ground. The dividing line that you should have with work is, are you working unto God or are you working unto self? Period.
Yes.
Like, you can do ministry for your own good and it is devastating and damaging to so many people.
Yes.
You can run a tech company for the glory of God and it will be so helpful to so many people.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to say in both cases, what does that mean? Well, we'll get there. We got a lot of places. We got a lot of things to share in this season.
Lots.
We'll get there. What does it mean to use your work as mission? What does it mean to glorify God in your work? But I just want to say the dividing line is not, do you make profit or are you a nonprofit?
Yeah.
The dividing line is, Are you working for God, or is your work essentially to make something of you?
Can I highlight it?
Highlight. I am going to come back to Crusade it formed me.
Yeah, yeah. Just to double click on that one little part is to say there's no difference between what you do and I do in the sense of the way that money comes in for you is different than way the money comes in for me organizationally.
Mm-hmm.
And it's mostly an IRS differentiation.
It's actually letting the IRS define our moral categories of work.
Exactly.
The IRS is not good at much, PSA.
Yeah.
Don't let them do theology for you.
Please, no need to audit for us saying that. You know, there's no need, but I'm
I'm sorry, I love you, IRS.
You guys are doing great, you know?
Wait, did you see, by the way, on my mind map, there's just a node that says, I hate taxes.
I did.
Did you see that part?
I didn't see it.
I started to get really out there on the money and stewardship, and then I just I hate taxes.
Yeah, so it's on the mind. You can realize we're right around tax season.
An IRS delineation. Go ahead.
But to say that, okay, so the way that money comes in and is categorized by the IRS is not the definition and the deciding factor of if your work matters or not. Let me just, for instance, I have a responsibility to lead the organization I lead with integrity and skill and kindness and proper management and
ambition. Would you say ambition?
Oh, absolutely. With
we're going to come to that.
With trying to take over the world for Jesus. Yes, we have the same and because I know you have an organization, but is actually a law firm that is doing good work in the world, and you want to have integrity.
Yes.
You want to be a great leader and manager. You want to care for the people. And it actually makes how you are leading this and how I am leading what I'm leading should not actually in any way, because of our beliefs and heart, should look no different. If anything, mm-hmm. we should be challenging each other. Justin, are you being the kind of leader and manager of an organization that people want to follow and that cares for people? All of life, can I just say this? And then I want to hear the story. All of life can be summed up in when it comes to work as service. We're made to serve. And if you can take every role that you ever have been given to serve, especially the higher your role becomes, the more healthy, the more beautiful, the more good and godly it will be. Because the moment I think that I'm leading this organization, it's my job now to be served, mm-hmm. is the moment, and you see this all over the place, is when things tank.
Yeah.
And
are
people
you serving
can,
or are you then
yeah.
be served?
And so anyway, just say wherever you're at, do not let the IRS decide if it's godly or not.
Yes.
It's godly because of who you are. And mm-hmm. it's godly because of you. If you're in that space, then yes, Jesus, you're going to move through that person to do good work. So as that comes and pertains back to training in the sense of your call, Campus Crusade, China, tell me more.
Yeah, no, it being in the ministry world, and I think Crusade was wonderful at this, it just taught me so many things. Taught me how to fundraise, taught me how to structure my day. Mm. It taught me how to be accountable to a goal.
Yes.
It taught me how to budget.
Whoa.
Because, we were poor. We had very little. I mean, I'm not kidding. To be clear, we lived like kings in China because the American dollar went so far. But I mean, the amount of money we're making
was just
a year was, slow. Technically, I think either on or below the American poverty line. So, but that's not to toot our own horn. We lived, so frugally. It was more just we didn't have extra money. We were very, we were very frugal. So it taught me how to deal with money.
Okay.
And incidentally, it taught me great theology, which was then the reason I felt called. And I tell this story in lots of places. I'm not going to, if you want to hear it, you need to go back to season one and listen to episode 7 on work. And you'll hear my story of me getting, you're impressed that I remember that.
I'm impressed that is it your ego that remembered that though? Because you love that episode the most. You're like, I loved how I did that episode so much.
I'm here to serve, not be served. Thank you very much.
That was really good that you remember that. I cannot keep track.
If you want to hear my full story of how I felt called from being a missionary to being a lawyer, go back and listen to that episode. I'm not going to tell it at length here.
Yeah.
But I really did have a point in China where I started to feel the way that God has wired me to serve the world, glorify him, and seek the redemption of all things in Jesus is actually in the business and law and political social world, not in evangelism. And I felt called to be like a quote unquote missionary to lawyering. And I say that, I really do still believe it. I feel like I have a call to it. But that was the beginning of me. Like, ministry set me up for this, realizing, oh, I want to obviously continue ministry for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. I'm an ambassador for Christ. I'm one of the, in the priesthood of all believers. Like, I'm a Christian. I have the Holy Spirit. Wherever I go is ministry. And so now I think, well, how does running a law firm do that? And we'll talk about that. Some of that is evangelism. Some of that is sort of discipleship, caring for your employees. Mm-hmm. A lot of that is stewarding the world that God made.
Yes.
And I'm not going to get into the nitty gritty of that because we'll get there on talking about calling and how your job relates and stuff. But I just want to note that was a huge movement for me, and we need to set that foundation for all our listeners. A couple resources if you want to read more on this. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to start saying this a lot because I've come to really believe it. Like, the habit of habits is reading. Like, everybody should, you should be a reader. I don't care if it's audiobooks, page books.
Yes.
I don't care if you get them from the library or buy them. You should be reading. Reading is one of the things that helped me so much with this. And I just recommend two thoughts here. N.T. Wright's Surprised by Hope is a wonderful view of the resurrection and the new heavens and the new earth and why things now, like mundane work, quote unquote, matter to eternity. It's a great book. Another theologian that really influenced me here, this is a little bit more upstream, but Father Capon, wonderful theology writer. He wrote a book called Romance of the Word that just helped me have a really strong theology of creation and understanding why it's kind of wild in the spectrum of all worldviews. Christianity really stands alone in this idea that God loves the material world. Mm-hmm. It flows out of his being. He's a being of love. He didn't need it. He was just like, I want to make something awesome. He's an artist. He still loves it. He's going to remake it into something new. So Father Capon, N.T. Wright were both huge influences for me in this.
I was going to say another, I think maybe depending if where you're at on the, N.T. Wright's great. I don't ever make it through all of his stuff.
The Resurrection of the Son of God is a tome.
Yeah.
And I've read many sections of it and many pieces of it. But Surprised by Hope is the layman's version of that.
Yes.
And it's quite good.
I'm just noting that for if anyone's like, N.T. Wright, no way. So that's why I'm highlighting that. Yeah. And then also, and I'm slow to ever promote this because I will never dishonestly promote something, especially if it's a family member. But John Mark, my brother-in-law, wrote Garden City.
You're like, I really don't want to promote John Mark, but I will. We love
that
you,
guy. I tell you what. No, he doesn't need the promotion. It's sincerely though. I think a lot of people have been helped by that book because it's doing a lot. It's a different version, but similar overlap. You'll see a lot of overlapping, at least as far as some of the ideas of what we're talking about in the sense of God loving the material world and what that looks like. And so that's just I'm noting that because I think Garden City is a great resource for that. We're talking about resources.
Yeah.
So I think it's really important to say, like, he did write that book. It was a long time ago when he wrote that book, actually, I think. But I also think that it's a really great book. I want to highlight...
Do you have another book?
No.
I want to just throw one more in here.
Do it.
And I've recently encountered Jordan Rayner's writings.
Oh, yeah.
I have one down here next to me. I think it's called The Sacredness of Secular Work. He's got a bunch of books. I'll call out another one when we do our episode on time and productivity.
Yes.
But Jordan Rayner's contemporary writer got some great writing on the sacredness of secular work.
I think we're speaking at something with him. I'm speaking at something with him.
Good.
Rainer?
I just Zoomed with him the other day. It was great. Hey, Jordan.
Nice flex. You win.
See? All right, the point you were going
to
make.
We're cousins. I wanted to let you know we found out we were blood cousins. Anything else you want to want up? Are we flexing right now? I don't think so.
Sorry, Jordan.
I was actually sincerely thinking, is that the guy? I think it is the guy. I couldn't remember his name. Okay, so Frederick Buchner, or
if we're gonna quibble over the pronunciation of Avoda or Avoda, I've been told that it's Frederick Buchner.
Buchner, okay.
Now I don't know that he's only one of my favorite writers, and I've read a lot.
So Buchner or Buchner,
have you read his fiction?
No, I haven't. Is it good?
I have a crush on bivocational people and people that do, you know, two different kinds of things. He has incredible fiction.
I didn't know that.
He's an ordained Presbyterian minister who wrote incredible works of fiction and incredible devotional works, some nonfiction work.
I think let's pause on that really quick. I wanted to share a quote, but what I love about that, what I see is that beautiful blend of like living your life fully of and who God's made you to be and not trying to do what you had said when we were talking about earlier.
Compartmentalize.
Sacred, the secular. Yeah. There's so much beauty in all of it. And it doesn't have to have a religious stamp, a nonprofit stamp, a church stamp to be good and godly. Yeah. In fact, in many ways, it's used even more when it's not. But Buechner, depending, is the place.
He's got a great quote on calling, I think, doesn't he?
It's a great quote. Someone was trying to call me. I don't know why that didn't. That was weird. He says, the place God calls you to is where your deepest gladness and the world's deep hunger meet.
Mm.
And
would you say it one more time? That's so good.
The place God calls you to is where your deep gladness, what you love to do, and the world's deep hunger meet. And I could not agree more with this. This is something that I think even recently I've found in my own life. And it's a huge gift of like things I actually love to do.
Yeah.
I get to do, and I also... it's a part of like what I'm made to do, but it also is my vocation. It's what I do to actually live as well. And that doesn't, I want to say, I know that doesn't always happen, but I also know that for so many years I prayed that it would.
Mm-hmm.
And for so many years I worked towards all the things I needed to do to understand that in my own life. And then also to actually then build skills to actually allow that to be the case.
Mm.
And so I think it's an important detail to note here that learning what you are made to do is a process, but the discovery process of what you like to do and are made to do, it just takes time. And yes. I think there's a lot of folks that we compare ourselves to that maybe had an early career. Honestly though, on a really sincere note, so John Mark, my brother-in-law, he is probably one of the more skilled people. I mean, if you know him, you know, he's a very smart guy, but he's also a very hard worker. He has this combination of gifts. You're similar in this a lot of ways. I see both of your entitlements the same. No, I'm just kidding.
There it is.
I knew it was coming. You knew
your
it was coming.
Arrogance is the
yeah,
same
it's just like the same level. This air. It's really weird. Hey, listen, boys, we have fun here all day. I respect the heck out of Justin. I'm absolutely kidding. But and with John Mark too, he is such a hard worker. I've had a front row seat to his life for the last how many. But we've been, you know, brothers essentially for 25 years.
I mean, you married his sister. So
married his sister, yeah, yeah. And I think the thing for me is that as I watch him and people get to experience different versions of him or his work, I think what was interesting as I've been growing in my own understanding and faith, he actually started really early in his vocation and his calling and his career. Why I want to highlight that is because as I've evaluated it, some people get really clear on what they're made to do and called to do early on,
mm-hmm.
even in their 20s mm-hmm. or 30s. And this can be really disruptive to those who are not.
I did not.
And it can make you feel like you're really behind.
Yes.
So I want to say this, if you're in your 30s or even 40s, you're like, I'm behind. No, you're not. It's a process. It takes time. But I will say this. If there is a world where you could be behind, I think being a good father and a good mother and having a good home is the thing that will help your kids get on this road far earlier than you are.
Oh, good.
And let me say this, because I've had a front row seat to my family, my story, and then my wife, and then John Mark and his story, one of the biggest differences in my observation of why John Mark was able to start his career early and run in it was lots of factors that had to do with his choice, his hard work, all that. It was also that when he entered adulthood, he didn't have to heal from years of a terrible childhood.
Oh, interesting.
And when you have a healthier family, that's a gift that you give is less baggage. They're ready.
Like
his dad the whole time was, Phil was so great at from early on, John Mark, what do you think about doing? Like when he was 10, 11, 12, he was talking with him then, and we're trying to do that now with our kids. Like, so what is it? What do you love? What are you passionate about? What do you think you're made to do?
Yeah.
So by the time he was like able to get an education and pick a path, with hard work and passion and direction, he was ready to run, which by the time, you know, he was in his 20s and even early 30s, he was already beginning to grow in his, the thing he was made to do. And I'm saying that whole story, that kind of like behind the curtain story, to just say, never compare yourself to somebody that's at a different time frame, because honestly, their story's different. What they have to heal from, mine was like 10 years of healing, of just understanding how to become a normal, healthy human to get to understand this stuff. So I just want to give everyone that's listening a little bit of a breath to say,
that's good.
Don't compare your story. It's
great. Now to John Mark too. I love it.
Oh dude, he's legit.
Can I pull one thing out of that quote? Because this is a concept I think that needs to get in this episode before we end it.
Yes.
Because we're about to go to an episode on calling and how to choose your vocation, all that. But the Buechner quote.
Yes.
Your calling is found when your greatest
gladness
meets the
world's deep hunger.
World's deep hunger. Here's why Buechner is an incredible writer, but here's why I really love this. If you pay attention to what's going on in that quote, there's a move from inner to outer, which means there's a direction, okay? It is an outward impulse in an outward direction. And one of the themes that needs to be set up for this whole season on work is that work is broken, messed up, and dangerous when it's turned inward to primarily serve us.
Yes.
That's the dividing line we said earlier. Yes. It's not for you so much as it is to glorify God by serving the world. That's an outward impulse. That's the dividing line, not for profit or nonprofit. The dividing line is it inward or outward? Okay. And I want to set up an outward, and the idea of a VODA is actually pretty new in my, it's only in the past 5 years of my life that I've started to really study this word or look at it in the scripture. But we talked about it in the Intentional Fatherhood retreat.
Yes.
Again, it's the name of my law firm. It's become very dear to me. And I think it helps here because a VODA shows up for the first time in Genesis 2, just as the word for work. Okay. But then it shows up in many places in the Old Testament, but two really important verses that you already know, they're very famous, and they're really going to help you make multidimensional your idea of work. It shows up in Exodus 8:1.
Yes.
Let my people go that they might come out to the wilderness and avoda me. Okay. And we usually think of that, we usually translate that word as worship. Let my people go that they might come and worship me.
Mm.
But Moses is saying, and God is saying to him, let my people go do the work of worship.
Mm.
When you're doing work in the Genesis avoda sense, this is pre-fall, right?
Yes.
There's a sense where your work is worship. Just imagine Genesis 2 before the fall. Mm. So many people think work is a product of the fall. It's what you have to do to earn a living, or it's like, you know, it's cursed, it's thorns and thistles. Well, yeah, that's true. But pre-fall, God made work to satisfy you by glorifying him. Mm. And it is actually, it's worship. Like Adam and Eve in the garden didn't have hymnals and liturgies and incense to like put on a service of worship to God.
Mm-hmm.
They worked the garden and that was their worship. So work as worship, that's an outward impulse. And then that word avoda shows up again in our favorite verse, the foundational verse of this podcast, Joshua 24:15.
Yes.
As for me and my house, we will avoda the Lord, and translated in this instance as service. And now, again, if you were at the fatherhood retreat, if you weren't, you missed out. Sorry, we're talking so much about it. We set up that first night of the dichotomy of that verse that Joshua was saying, don't serve the gods of the Canaanites and the Amorites. They do weird stuff, despicable stuff. It gets wild, the stuff they were actually doing. If you want to know, we'll talk about it at the next fatherhood retreat. It's pretty dark, very sexual. But he was setting that up as like, you're in slavery to these gods.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be in a VODA service, which actually did have the connotation of like servanthood, like bondsman.
Wow.
So like you were in service of the garden.
Yes.
You're in the service of worship. You're a slave to righteousness. All these terms of the Bible sort of like get unified together.
Yeah.
Joshua was talking about it as a VODA, as the work of service.
Yes.
And I just think that's a great way to send you off thinking about work here in the first episode. It is work outwardly as worship to God and service to other people. That is an outward impulse. It is not to inflate your identity. It is not to line your pockets. primarily, it is to make you of use to the world and worship to God and service to others.
That's very well said. We're going to give you a practice, and we want to respond to a question or so or two that you had piped in. But I have to say something that I forgot to tell you.
Yeah.
This is very funny. You're going to like this. First is the remember at the Fatherhood Retreat, there was a group of guys that tattooed themselves in a hotel room.
Yeah.
So
with a, like, I think they bought the tattoo gun on Amazon and like it was their first time doing
tattooing each other. It was
I respect those guys so much.
So this is such a funny like full circle. So that happened. And then we're just at the Motherhood Retreat. Similar thing, 600 ladies in a room.
They did not tattoo themselves.
No, they did not tattoo themselves. No.
I knew it.
But
only dudes would do that.
Yeah. But then we're in the green room and we're just going over the night and what's about to happen. Joey Odom. Yes. There you are, buddy. He was there and he was going to do an announcement. And I saw this we had a shared note that he had added to. And I see this just bullet point that says, thigh guys, wives. And I was like, Joey, what the heck is this? Thigh guys, wives?
Were they there?
Like, well, let me finish the story, bro. And then so he gets up. He's like, just trust me. And all of these guys had gotten 24/15 from Joshua 24/15, which, by the way, I would like to get a tattoo on this trip. I'm just saying it. I'll do it. Is that real?
I'm still a virgin when it comes to tattoos. I have to plan out my first.
So you don't mean.
We're not going to get distracted here.
You don't mean yes. Okay. Let your SPS is biblical. Anyway, they get this, they get the tattoos and turns out they sent all of their wives there
at the Motherhood Retreat
and they all stood up and they were all there. It was just the coolest full circle. And they ended up getting like a ring for their covenant friendship because they didn't want to get tattoos. But a ring, like this beautiful gold ring that had an engraved thing on it.
All right. This is what I was talking about at the beginning of the episode where I feel like the Lord is doing stuff way beyond us. If you were to like put on a conference that is so good that it inspires guys to get covenant friendship tattoos and then send their wives to the next one and have covenant rings, we'd be like, I have no idea. I don't know how.
I have to tell you what was also absolutely staggering to me, just absolutely mind blowing, is that there was such a contingent of men that did that. They were impacted and they sent their wives. And it was incredible. Was such a full circle situation. So I just had to say that because you were talking about the tattoos. I was like, yes, it's great.
I love it.
So let's talk about two practices.
Yeah, it's quick practices. Yeah.
Why don't you set up? Let's talk about writing the story of your work.
You should write the story of your work. We want this to be practical throughout the season. And by the way, we're going to do like three foundational episodes on theology of work. Next one's on calling. But then we're going to do five plus episodes on practices. It's going to
be practical throughout, but we will get very practical as we keep going.
But we're going to stay practical the whole time. So here's my practice for you here. I think everybody should be able to tell the story of their work through a biblical theology lens. So as a lawyer, I would say, okay, what does my work have to do with creation? Okay. What does it have to do with the fall? What does it have to do with redemption? And what does it have to do with consummation? And this
those
is
those four.
Those four things. So creation, fall, redemption, new heavens and new earth, often called consummation. Creation. God is a God of order. Like he made the world in an orderly fashion. And one way that you can think about all lawyers is they're trying to bring order to an area of the world.
Mm-hmm.
The world has fallen. It is broken. One of the realities, the reasons that we need law, this is actually where most people think of law, is righting the wrongs. You need justice needs to be done.
Yes.
And you can think about my vocation is make sure justice is not lost in the deal we're making.
Yes.
Or make sure justice is recovered in the deal we're making. Redemption. I think what we need, the word made flesh to do this. You need covenant. You need promises.
Yep.
Somebody needs to sacrifice in order for somebody else to gain. I'm always thinking about how the lens of Jesus, I mean, redemption's almost the easiest one because Jesus changes everything about me, about my coworkers, about how I work. But I'm always thinking about how does the lens of the gospel change the way I'm thinking about this problem or how does it affect the story of law big time? And then consummation, law is always pointing us to a world to come. Like you're always thinking in law about how am I making the right deal so that essentially people can live happily ever after.
Wow.
Like we write with a hope. Like I'm a contract lawyer, right? So I'm not litigating. I'm helping people make deals. And part of the idea is that if covenants are kept, there's a future for everybody. And that doesn't make sense in a world without God.
Dude, like that's it doesn't. Good.
You'd You're be right. utterly depressed. Like, no one ever keeps their promises. It never works. There's no future for anybody. You wouldn't want to do it. But when you believe the Christian story, you say, oh no, I'm playing a little part of this. I'm saying we're weaving covenants to create a happily ever after, because if everybody abides by them, the world flourishes. There's a new heavens and new earth, or at least an echo of it. So I can think about my job. I could do this for being a father, for being a writer, for others, like other parts of my vocation. But wherever you are, and particularly the farther you are into quote unquote secular work, you know, you're an electrician. Let there be light. Things are broken. They need to be fixed. Like how are you the person that comes in? I'm in awe of the people who come in snowstorms and fix our power lines.
Oh,
like dude. Jesus, they come into crisis and they put the world back together. So I'm just saying, like, run your vocation through this narrative line. It's not an easy thing to do. It's a really worthwhile thing to do.
Dude, I really love how you said that, or not just said it, but those four, we'll have those in the show notes. So if you're like, where can I find this? Just go. It'll be quick to remember the show notes. One other practice that's going to prep you for the next one, but also very important.
Yeah, this is a good one.
This is just very simple, but I also think, again, just like what you had mentioned, taking even 10 minutes or an hour in the morning one day, just like just try to think through this. It will just help you get clear is I know for me and for you. So write down three things that give you life and three needs you see in the world. So three.
This
things.
Is like along the Buechner quote.
This is the Buechner quote, and that's again what next. You know, we're going to talk a lot more about calling. So this is almost like a pregame to next week, and when all that content will be even more fleshed out. But even in the meantime, if you can just identify, write down three things that bring you life. Don't judge them. They don't have to be very complicated. Yeah. Just name them, and then the three needs you see in the world, and then just look at the overlap. Like, where is there overlap there? Because there's a lot. So what a question. We had a bunch of questions, which were fun to come in.
Yes. Send in your questions. We love answering them. This one came in through Instagram on a post.
A couple of them did. Let's
do one to wrap up.
I was just going to pick one. This is good. Ooh, well, like they're all good. Let's do this. How do I integrate my work and my faith and not compartmentalize the two? Actually, we kind of responded to that a little bit.
I hope this episode
responded to
is
that.
An answer to that, because there's no sense in which your faith shouldn't be present at work in evangelism and discipleship. Like your coworkers should know you're a believer, but it's, you know, 99% of the time, if not more, at work, you're just going to be living out your faith into the good of your work. And if you think that is not your faith, then you're just missing the big theology of work and you feel compartmentalized. But when you realize it's not, you realize, oh, I'm a good worker because I'm a Christian. I do it this way because I'm a Christian. This is my worship. This is my service.
I couldn't agree more. The one other, let's, because that was a quick one, and basically the answer is this episode. Another one that came in, how do I value my job when family/church responsibilities feel more fulfilling and important? Let me just say this really quick. How do you value your job? I think it's exactly version of what Justin just said, what we've been talking about this whole episode, but it's also remembering that as soon as you start to identify and recognize that that job actually is a basis, a foundation that actually helps you love and serve the responsibilities. Yes, you might enjoy certain things differently. That doesn't mean there's not value. And let's be fair, there's so many things in this world, this side of heaven, that you will not like doing. And I remember talking to somebody, a leadership person, and we were talking about this idea, like if you like 80% of what you do, that's more than most.
That's bangarang. That's like great.
If there's 20% of your job that you don't like, that's very normal for everybody, that there's going to be a percentage that you don't like. Now, if it's like reversed 80-20, maybe the grind's too hard. Maybe the schedule, of course, but like there's just going to be things that might be more fulfilling, like ministry or like your family. And that's not bad. That's actually good. And it doesn't mean there's anything wrong with your job.
Yeah.
There's not at all. So season 3, we're here. Episode 1.
We got a lot of more to talk about.
So but much more next week.
That was a good start.
That was a good start. And write these questions down. Process, they'll be in the show notes. And we will see you next week.
Let's go.